Yes, welcome back to Monday's edition here on World Football Daily. It is Champions League coming up this week. God, we've been without it for so long and I'm so glad it's back. A man who I'm sure is very glad that it's back too this week is the man on the line right now, Mr. Tim Stannard, La Liga Loca himself, joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Spanish football. Tim, how are you doing today, mate?
Very well, thank you very much. I'm the only person not looking forward to it because I'm lazy, therefore Manchester United coming to town means more work.
I think you might well be the only person that isn't looking forward to Manchester United against Real Madrid this week, Tim. We're going to get, of course, into the big Champions League ties that are coming up for both Valencia and Madrid this week in just a second. But we do have to look back at what took place on the weekend. Barcelona, was that their best performance we've seen from them this season? Because it was just so complete, it seemed.
It's very complete against a Getafe side who are never that good on their way away from home. They're never really that good this season. They're very average. They were shorn of a few important players. So it was a bit of a walk in the park with some late goals, I think, when Getafe had given them up. So they were made to look good, I think, by not the best opposition, really.
It's even incredible. Pique even getting on the score sheet on the afternoon. This Barca side is getting into a nice rhythm at the moment of scoring and scoring a lot. Is this the perfect time with the Champions League coming up next week for them?
Well, what's frustrating Barcelona fans is not so much the fact that they're scoring lots of goals. They have done that all this season. I think it's like 7 or 8 times they've scored 4 or more in La Liga. It's the fact they seem incapable of keeping a clean sheet. And at the moment, Barca fans will be quite happy with a very solid 2-0 with the defence looking fine, but they keep letting in sloppy goals. And so that is the main concern if you speak to Barca fans. So rather than scoring 7 or 8, which is going to be easy against Getafe, it's going to be what happens when you do play teams like Milan, you know, who are going to be a little bit better defensively and have a little bit more up front as well.
There were comments and criticism of the Barca defence after the game the previous week against Valencia. Where do you see these problems being in the back four? What are the weak links for them?
It's individual errors more than anything else. It's quite often players just switching off, rather like Jordi Alba did when he just headed the ball straight, you know, into the path of Alvaro for Getafe. So it's not really anything that can be fixed in terms of strategy, in terms of tactics. Although being quite small doesn't really help, as we know on a few occasions, set pieces, less often they really can be changed. It's just Barca fans they think the concentration's lacking at a key moment sometimes in the back four.
Is that due to complacency because, you know, they're Barcelona? They are a side that seem to score, you know, 4 or 5 every single or every other week. And they're just maybe getting a little bit lax and switching off because of that?
It could well be, yes. You need a big stick every now and again just to keep them switched on. So, although Tito Villanova, watching from New York, would probably almost certainly have enjoyed the fact that it was 6 different scorers and Alexis Sanchez scored one of them, which showed how easy it was, that match. He'd have been really annoyed by the one conceded. That was just they just want a clean sheet, really. They haven't really got too many.
We even saw David Villa getting on the score sheet. He's scoring again when he seems to get the opportunity for Barca. Doesn't look happy, though. His attitude on the pitch doesn't look like he wants to be in a Barcelona shirt. Were you surprised that he didn't make a move in January? And how much is he worth on the open market, do you think, at the moment?
It's difficult to tell because I don't really know the ins and outs. Well, no one does, really, of how much his injury affected him, which was 13 months ago. It's quite a serious one. Remember the bone popping out of his shin? And the fact that he's not playing all the time, they still say he's on his recovery step. So it's really difficult to know what his value would be with his age as well. But I'm sure there are options for him to move, but he chose not to. And I don't think Barcelona wants to because he is a key goal scorer. And it's one of those where if you take out Leo Messi, then David Villa really is the one you'd need to pop in, make up the difference.
And his importance highlighted as well by the fact that he's still involved in the national team squad. He played against Uruguay in the week as well.
Yeah, it was interesting to see at the end of that game. You actually had a forward line of what Barca could be like without Messi if he was out for some reason. You had Cesc, Villa and Pedro, and it was pretty good as well. So, yes, they've got a lot of strength and depth, which is why I think they want to keep David Villa. He may not be completely happy there. It's hard to say, but I can see why they want to keep him.
Elsewhere, we had Atletico Madrid losing this weekend. Does this sort of loss kind of highlight the fact that they're not ready to make a title challenge just yet? Because if you want to win a title, you've got to be able to get past a side, a side like Rayo Vallecano.
I think they were never, ever, ever, ever going to be heading for a title challenge. That simply isn't possible. What they're doing already is quite incredible. The points total they have got is almost record-breaking for them. So everyone should rule out the idea they were ever going to win it, because you can't have the consistency and the squad depth of Barcelona to do that. They're striker. They just have one functioning striker, really. So the fact they're still seventh, and we're in February, is good enough, I think, for most.
What about Rayo Vallecano as a side this season, pushing up there for a Europa League spot at the moment, and people may be surprised to see them this high up, this far up at the table at this point in the season?
Well, they were in a very similar position last season. They were doing really, really well. They went onto a flyer, but then they sort of reached the 40-point mark and then ended up losing about 9-10 games in a row, and they very nearly lost out at the end of the season. I think the thought this year is perhaps they're not going to make that mistake. They're going to keep driving until they get 42 points, 43 points. And they're just two wins away from that. After that, though, I have a feeling you'll see them tail off. They just don't really have the squad and the strength to keep up this run. I think they'll be happy to pick up the points as early as possible and just cruise for the rest of the season, and deservedly so.
Is this Vallecano side making the use of kind of a great amount of experience, but also mixed with raw youth? I mean, you've got Leo up front, who's scored 7 goals this season, kind of combining with Petey, the 31-year-old, who's scored 10 for them this season. There's always seems to be a nice mix of age and talent in that side.
It's a completely mad combination, basically. It's a completely mad club. It makes no sense what they're doing. I saw the 11 and beginning of the season, I thought, well, they're going to get relegated because defensive didn't seem good enough. It was going to be hard for them to replace the goals of Michu and Diego Costa and the other players who left, but they've somehow managed to do that. A lot, perhaps, to be said that other teams underestimating Rayo, especially when Rayo are at home, and also a lot to be said for their manager, who has just an attack approach, just goes for every single match. If they lose 4-5-0, doesn't really matter because they're going to win more than they lose.
Athletic Bilbao's little bubble also burst this weekend. We were saying a couple of weeks back that they looked like the side that we watched in the Europa League at points last season, getting absolutely torn apart though by Espanyol this week, and they've been on an incredible run of form. What does that come down to? Because they've only lost one since their change of manager back in December.
It's quite remarkable. It's Javier Giri, who is, people don't know him, he's a bit of an old player in La Liga. He was a manager of Osasuna when they were very good about 5-6 years ago, Atletico and Mitragosa as well. He's a specialist at a combination of motivating and scaring his players into performing better and just doing anything that's necessary to win games. So his team can be nasty and he can be nasty, even though he's a bit of a charmer off the field. He's not really a manager you want for 2 or 3 years. You're not really there to build a plan and build a squad and keep things going for a long period of time. He's very much a firefighter and he gets immediate results no matter who he's got.
Well, he's had very immediate results at Espanyol. Athletic Bilbao still struggling on with Bielsa. And as I said, they looked like they were back on form and back to what we were used to seeing from last season. And it all came crumbling down this week. What was the reason behind that fall? Was it just poor on-the-field planning?
Well, the bubble wasn't that big. It was a case of they had a good performance in Athletic Madrid, but they didn't lose games. So they were, by not losing, they were made to look very good. They've still got massive problems there, especially at the defence. It's the second worst in the division, which you don't expect from Athletic Bilbao. And that's fundamentally the problem. They're still scoring a fair amount of goals with Adarit and a few others. Oscar de Marcos is picking up a couple now, but the defence is just a mess. So if they are going to concede 2-3 again, then they are going to lose them.
Moving now into the other big side, of course, in Spain, Real Madrid. They've got their Champions League game up against Manchester United this weekend. Ideal time for Cristiano Ronaldo to be firing on all cylinders. And we have seen him just playing some out-of-this-world football in the last few weeks.
Yeah, he's looking very good indeed. And it was good fun to watch him against Sevilla. Supposedly not 100% fit, carrying a bit of a knock, as they say. But another hat-trick. And that's, I think, not mistaken, 2 hat-tricks in the last 2 home games in the league against Getafe in this one. So, well, the problem Madrid have is that no one else is really delivering much at the moment. Neither Benzema or Higuain are looking particularly sharp. There are doubts over who's going to be in the back four. Varane's injured. Pepe's coming back from injury. Marcelo is nowhere to be seen. Arbeloa's looking a little bit catchy these days. So there's an awful lot of concerns ahead of the Manchester United game. It's very interesting to see because United, they can focus on the Champions League because for them, the league title perhaps is sewn up. But for Real Madrid, it's all they've got.
When you look at this Madrid side and taking on Sevilla this weekend, how important was it psychologically? Because they struggled against Sevilla earlier on in the season and they really needed to have a boost because of everything that goes on in the papers with Mourinho and the rest of this squad when it comes to kind of what happens on the training ground at the moment. It was important to get the win this weekend.
Well, I think they actually needed a little bit more of a battle. I think the concern is that Sevilla just didn't really offer too much. Again, some of the team without their best player at the moment in Rakitic, so they were just there for the taking. What they needed really is a little bit of softening up. The trouble is in Madrid, everyone goes into despair when they lose games like the one against Granada and Osasuna previously, which was a draw. and then they're jubilant and over the top and they say we're back and we're fantastic when they beat sides like Sevilla. There's no happy medium, and that's where Real Madrid need to be as well. It was a good win, but it was against a very, very average opposition, light years behind what they're going to face against Manchester United.
Kaká was back in the side as well for this one. And again, the times he gets to play, he plays very well in this Madrid side. Is Jose ever going to give him a chance to have some regular first-team football?
Well, the trouble is he's had many chances. He plays very well against average opposition at home, but he completely vanishes in big games. He vanishes away from home as well, which is the trouble. Kaká is fine if you've got a soft touch of opposition, but you know, he's not there when you really, really need him in tough grounds.
What about heading into this week's Champions League fixture for Madrid? Are they going in as underdogs into this one?
I reckon it's about 50-50. I must confess that I haven't really seen enough of Manchester United to give a full and frank answer on it. It's you know, tracking all the clubs in Spain. But I'd say this one's 50-50 because I know Manchester United fans say they have doubts about their defence. Real Madrid have got an awful lot of doubts. So it's fairly even. I don't think anyone really knows what level the other team are at.
I was going to say, I imagine for the neutral, everybody is hoping that it's going to be an absolute goal fest. United so strong going forward, as we've seen this season. And Madrid's problems have been with their defence. So do you see that being the breaking point for Madrid? Just whether they can rally as a back four together and put in a good performance?
I think it's going to be a very low-scoring stalemate in the first match, I have a feeling. The reason is that Manchester United know that Madrid's great strength is the counter-attack. If you give the ball away and put too many players forward, they will finish you off. They scored a goal in about 10 seconds after winning possession against Sevilla. And Real Madrid's huge weakness is when they have the ball, because they really struggle to be creative and to have the momentum to put the passes together. And we saw that in games like Granada and Osasuna, teams who give them possession, but Madrid can't do anything with it. So I'm not wholly optimistic for a great game at the Bernabeu. I think it's going to be a lot more interesting in Old Trafford.
What's an acceptable scoreline for Madrid going into the second leg? Are they looking to poach a sneaky win then, or is it all about just limiting the damage that United can do at the Bernabeu and trying to get something at Old Trafford?
I think you should look at the Copa del Rey semi-final perhaps as an idea of what they want for the knockout. Barcelona scored, and that rocked Real Madrid a little bit. I think Madrid will be happy with any result as long as Manchester United do not score away from home. If they do score, then it's going to be very, very tough.
Valencia take on PSG as well in midweek, and that's a very difficult fixture to predict as well, because although PSG on paper are a very strong side, Valencia have this Champions League almost experience that PSG don't really have. How do you see this one playing out?
I'm the same as you. I have no idea on this one, because maybe we don't see enough of the French League. We can't really judge PSG their level with the French League, but they did very well in their group. They won 5 of their 6 games, so we have to take that as an indication. And on paper, they are much, much, much better than Valencia. So this is one where I have no idea what's going to happen, I'm afraid. I think everyone's in the same position. So I actually really wanted to be able to...
Have you seen a difference in Valencia's approach to their La Liga games and their Champions League games this season? Have you seen a change in their play and their style at all?
It's difficult to say, because they fired the manager who was responsible for the Champions League campaign. He went. So it's a different manager and different players and different tactics. So it's going to be a totally different Valencia, you could say, from the one that was playing in the Champions League.
How much is going to be riding on Robert Soldado's shoulders for these Champions League knockout games? Is it the pressure on him to deliver the goals for them in the latter stages of the tournament?
Yeah, he's the one. But for me, he's a good striker, but I don't think he's sort of top, as they say in England, top strikers, Harry Redknapp would say. I don't think he's Spain class. I think he's kind of Champions League group stages, a little bit above class. So I think he gets found out when things get really tough for Valencia, when it gets to the knockout stages. I don't quite think he's there. I don't think he's quite got that finishing prowess.
Tim, I'm maybe looking a little bit too far ahead in the future, but of course Malaga are also a side in this Champions League knockout stage. They had a great win, and Isco once again playing a fine role in their win in the weekend. Were you surprised that there was no serious offers came in for Isco in the transfer window this January? Because many were expecting him to be making a move elsewhere.
Well, it's possible that offers came in, but we don't know about them because they sold Monreal instead, so they do need money. So I think it might have been a little bit difficult by selling Monreal and Isco. So it wouldn't surprise me if offers came in. It wouldn't surprise me if they knocked them back and perhaps waiting for the summer, because they did manage to shift a defender off to Arsenal.
How important is that move for Malaga? How does that have an impact on their back four? Do they have cover for Nacho?
Not really, no. Eliseu, who does play, can play in that position, is injured at the moment, and they had to bring in someone from the youth ranks, if I'm not mistaken, I believe. So, yeah, they haven't really got the cover on Manuel Pellegrini. He said he understands they've got to balance the books, but it really isn't helping their cause when it comes to the games of football. They're struggling for numbers.
At what point with Malaga do they have to start drawing a line and saying, look, if we start tearing this side down more and more, we are going to be in a lot of trouble in terms of keeping hold of players and being able to carry on this sort of success?
Well, they're in that situation already. The sporting director has said, this is reality. We have to pay wages. We have to make sure we have more money coming in, or the same money coming in that we're spending out. At the moment, we don't. So I think they're fully aware of the situation they're in, and Manuel Pellegrini is frustrated because he knows there's no alternative. They have to sell to make ends meet at the club.
It's a very difficult situation in Malaga indeed, and we wish them every bit of success as they head through into the knockout round coming up next week. Tim, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show this Monday and to kick off the week with you as always, and we look forward to getting you back on as soon as we can, mate.
Fantastic, a pleasure as always. Cheers.
Cheers, Tim. Thank you very much. Tim Stannard there joining us here on World Football Daily on Monday's edition of the show to kick off what is a fantastic week of Champions League football, and of course Real Madrid against Manchester United at the Bernabeu.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews, and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.